versus Fowler, 08-1771. And I'll give you a moment to get sorted out and in your places. And I'll probably mispronounce this, Mr. Delosto.
Perfect, Your Honor. Good morning,
gentlemen. You'll be known by that from now on, right?
It's one of those Italian names, but originally from Rockford in northern Illinois. But may it please the Court, my name is Ray Delosto from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm with the firm of Gimbel, Riley, Guerin & Brown. As Judge Mannion indicated earlier, I've been around quite a while, too, some 33 years doing this kind of work, both as a public defender and private counsel. And we're here asking on behalf of Mr. Fowler today that the Court vacate the sentence and remand it with directions. And we seek the Court's guidance over an issue that is... It could come out of the CNN headline news. It's rapidly changing sands on what is happening with mandatory minimums, the sentencing guidelines, not only crack cocaine, but other sentencing guidelines, laws, and how they're applied. I have great temptation to go outside the record, but I won't because things have been happening quickly on this. But you really have an ambiguity that exists in the statutory interpretation, two conflicting shells, as I've discussed it in my brief, that is between 18 U.S. Code 3551 and 3553A, the factors that a district court should apply in sentencing, and whether or not or how to interact 21 U.S.C. 841B1A, which is a mandatory minimum sentence of 10 years if a person is found to have been involved in distribution of 5 kilograms or 5,000 grams of powdered cocaine. The Kimbrough case I would propose to the Court, which applies Booker and expands that, has created a revolutionary, I think, movement, bringing back the discretion that existed when I started practicing back in the mid-70s and 80s to federal judges and to state judges. And I think this is an important movement, and I think this Court, I'm not asking you to change and create new law, but to provide guidance to district courts to say yes, as the Velez Court said, and which I cited out of the First Circuit in my reply brief, that you do have discretion, you do have to interpret 3553A factors, and the government will argue the mandatory minimum of 841B should be seen as a trump card regardless. And my position would be, and I think Kimbrough and where the case law is going, says that if this Court applies the parsimony provisions of 3553A, applies Kimbrough, and tries to read 841's 10-year minimum sentence in conjunction with the other important factors that a sentencing court has to consider under 3553A and 3551. It's not a trump card. It's one of the considerations, just as the 100-to-1 crack cocaine provision, which is found in 841B1A sub 3. We're dealing with sub 2 for powder cocaine, and the sentencing guidelines was found in Kimbrough to have problems, and discretion should be allowed to the district court in sentencing. The situation you have here, and I'm not going to repeat the various factors in 3553A that a court has to discuss, but part of it is to balance and have fair and consistent sentencing. The kingpins in this case, who moved in excess of 1,000 kilograms, got less time than one of their providers, Mr. Fowler, my client. Mr. Fowler, unfortunately, comes on the scene and is arrested years later, so his ability and the window of opportunity to provide what the kingpins and some others did, that is information and cooperation, to get the only way off of the mandatory minimum, which would be a government motion under current law, that was gone. Is this consistent to have him be sentenced to less than, and is it fair to be sentenced less than the kingpins, or does the court have the power after Kimbrough, especially given this tension and given this ambiguity that exists, which this court recognized in the Roberson case pre-Kimbrough? I believe that as the Velez court and other courts are, I think the wind is blowing in the direction that they do have greater consideration. So I ask this court to vacate and remand Mr. Fowler's sentence, and with directions as to how the circuit court has to apply. Is 841 a trump? And if it is a trump, how is it equated with the other 3553A factors? Is it a place to start with as a floor, as occurred here, I believe, and then you add on and go upwards to what the proposed guideline sentence would be and then sentence within? Or can it be considered one of the sentencing factors but not a presumptive, not a trump, and the court can consider that, yes, Congress has decided moving this much cocaine, delivering this much cocaine, whether it's in one instance or over several instances, as occurred here in a few-day time period, is so serious that the court should give credence and consideration of a longer sentence. But is it mandatory to overcome the other sentencing factors that the court should consider and shall consider under 3551 and 3553A? And I think the answer is, with good statutory construction and applying the rules of parsimony as well as the rule of lenity to the ambiguity here, it should not be seen as a trump card. However, we're in a gray area or a twilight zone post-Kimbrough. The government cites in its brief some declinations and decisions by the court regarding Alford briefs. I don't think those should be seen as a clear statement and decision by this court as to how the mandatory minimum post-Kimbrough of sub 2 of 841 should be applied. At the same time, I think, Your Honors, should not feel constrained after Kimbrough, and the district courts do need guidance as to, do we use this as a floor and then go upwards, or can we decide in our sentencing consideration that 10-year is a benchmark, but 10-year is not the deciding benchmark, and then try to work it that way. And the government argues in its brief that any error was harmless, and Judge Clavert, because he sentenced over the mandatory minimum of 120 months, Mr. Fowler was given 160, this probably wouldn't have made a difference, even if you do vacate or find that there was an issue. With all due respect, the 800-pound gorilla, as I call it, of the 10-year mandatory minimum is there, and it does affect how judges view that. I know, and I practiced before Judge Clavert and the other judges in the Eastern District for a number of years, I think it would be pure speculation to say he wouldn't have given a different sentence and perhaps a lesser sentence had he felt that he wasn't constrained by the application of this trump card. So for those reasons, Your Honor, and I, again, don't want to repeat what is in the brief, after Kimbrough and after Booker, the carefully intermeshed gears which you had, 3551 requires application of 3553. Before Booker and before Kimbrough, 3553B says the court shall impose a sentence under the guidelines, citing A4. After Booker, that's no longer. So these gears no longer intermesh at this point. And if, as in Kimbrough, the 841 sub 3 for powder cocaine or cocaine base was found not to be a required mandatory minimum, I argue that the same provisions and the same rationale should apply for sub 2. Courts should have discretion to fashion a just and reasonable sentence. So, Your Honors, unless you have any questions now, I'd ask to reserve a short time.
All right. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jonathan Koenig. I appear on behalf of the United States in this matter. My opponent's premise seems to be that because the guidelines are now advisory, statutory mandatory minimum sentences should also be advisory. And his argument in a nutshell is that Booker and Kimbrough have changed everything. Everything has gone out the window now, and district judges are free to exercise their discretion without regard to the minimums. Here's why I think that argument is wrong, respectfully. The Supreme Court in Booker made the guidelines advisory because of a concern, Sixth Amendment concern, about enhancing a defendant's sentence on the basis of facts that were neither admitted by the defendant nor proven to a jury. In this situation, there's no fact-finding by a judge that gets you to 120 months. The facts that trigger the minimum in this case were admitted by Mr. Fowler in his plea agreement. Now, true enough, he was sentenced even further above, but that was under the guidelines, which the judge in this case clearly understood to be advisory, as evidenced in part by the fact that he's sentenced below the guidelines. So I would respectfully suggest that the Apprendi, Booker, Gall, Rita, Kimbrough cases are just not in play here, and that this court should continue to follow its precedent in Roberson and Duncan and some of the other cases, if Congress in its wisdom decides to change policy in that area, that is the prerogative of Congress. And indeed, that may happen. Briefly, with respect to counsel's other argument, his statutory interpretation argument, I would submit that Section 3551, far from creating ambiguity, actually resolves any ambiguity or conflict that might otherwise exist between 3553A and Section 841A1, because it says so clearly, except as otherwise specifically provided in the opening words of Section 3551. Section 841A specifically provides for a mandatory minimum in this situation. So if there are no further questions from the panel, I would ask that you affirm the conviction and the sentence in this case.
All right, Mr. Koenig, and I apologize for the mispronunciation of your name.
Oh, that's quite all right. Thank you.
Mr. DeLosto.
Very briefly, Your Honor, and I too mispronounced it, which I apologize as well. It's more, again, Your Honors, what I'm asking the court to do is not to make new law, but also I'm asking the court not to ignore how the law has changed and is changing. And other circuits are considering where this changes. And the Seventh Circuit in Roberson noted that there was this tension of these conflicting shalls. And I think it's incumbent upon the court to provide guidance to other district courts rather than just say, no. And if the guidance is 841 trumps it, then so be it. But at least give those courts, and I think it doesn't, though, with all due respect to the government's position. And again, while not a case, I think it does give a sense, a finger to the wind of where the court will may be going in the next case coming up on this. When Justice Kennedy's speech to the ABA, I quoted in the my reply brief, talked about the fact that he cannot accept neither the wisdom, the justice, nor the necessity of mandatory minimums, which in all too many cases are unjust. And in this case, I do find that had and believe that had Justice or Judge Clavert had this direction and ability, he would have fashioned a sentence that would not have let the kingpins out with less time than just one of their providers. So thank you very much, Your Honors, for the time.
Thank you to both counsel. This was a private case, wasn't it?
Initially private, although we're going to be submitting.
We do appreciate the advocacy on both sides, and we'll take this under advisement along with the other five cases and be in adjournment until tomorrow morning at 9:30.